Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Professor Francis A. Boyle joins us to talk about foreboding headlines on Iran.
We're seeing President Bush pursuing the same strategy he did against Iraq on weapons of mass destruction.
During his visit to Europe, President George W. Bush met with British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, and the two leaders outlined plans for sanctions on a leading Iranian bank, plus possible limits on Iran's ability to ship oil. First, we look at the case against George W. Bush for murder.
One indictment, perhaps the whole house of cards would collapse at that point.
Professor Francis A. Boyle teaches at the College of Law at the University of Illinois. He is author of numerous books, including Destroying World Order, published by Clarity Press, and Defending Civil Resistance Under International Law, which has been used successfully in numerous foreign policy protest trials. Professor Boyle, thank you so much for joining us again.
Dori, thank you for having me on, and my best to your listening audience.
Professor Boyle, you've been talking about trying George W. Bush for murder. Why don't you talk about how that would come to pass?
Right. For the past several weeks now, I've been working with people in Maine, Vermont, Connecticut, North Carolina, New York, New Jersey, on a campaign to get President Bush indicted by district attorneys or state's attorneys for murdering United States Armed Forces in Iraq. At common law here in the United States, murder is defined as the unlawful killing of a human being with malice aforethought. Now, it's very easy to parse those terms in this context. Unlawful killing, the war itself was unlawful and illegal. It violated the United Nations Charter. On two separate occasions, the president tried to get authorization from the Security Council to authorize this war and failed. Killing. In this case, it's pretty much as if President Bush were to push a human being into a meat grinder. In this case, the meat grinder of Iraq. Malice. Well, we all know malicious, what that means. It's a common term. We now find out from these revelations by Scott McClellan, the presidential spokesperson and before that deputy spokesperson at all relevant times, that the president and his henchpeople maliciously concocted lies and propaganda to get Congress to give authorization to go to war and to stampede the American people into war by scaring them to death. And the last term of that definition, aforethought, meaning basically you thought about it beforehand. And once again, as Mr. McClellan has apparently pointed out in his book, the plot and plan to do this was put together in the summer of 2002. So all the elements of murder of United States Armed Forces are there. We have now going on the number of 4,100 members of U.S. Armed Forces who have been murdered by Bush, Cheney, and Rice in Iraq. They are our mothers and our fathers, our brothers and our sisters, our sons and our daughters. And if you take a look at a map, you'll find out that almost every community in America has suffered at least one casualty of what Bush, Cheney, and Rice have done. That then would give the local district attorneys from where these murdered soldiers originated, jurisdiction to prosecute the president for murdering someone resident in their county. What we're trying to do now is to get a team of citizens together in every county in the country and to go into their district attorney, who, by the way, is popularly and locally elected and hopefully more susceptible to the will of the people, the community, than unfortunately are members of the United States Congress, who appear to be immune from the wishes of the people, and request that the district attorney convene a grand jury and present the evidence against Bush, Cheney, and Rice for murder and conspiracy to murder citizens or residents of that territory in Iraq. Unfortunately, the district attorneys would not really have jurisdiction to prosecute for all the dead Iraqis. That number now estimates being somewhere about 1.2 million dead. That type of prosecution would have to take place before some type of international tribunal, or perhaps even another state willing to undertake that prosecution, or even a new administration here in the United States. But certainly, I think and I would hope that all Americans could agree now, and especially in light of Scott McClellan's book, that the president, the vice president, and certainly the secretary of state should be prosecuted for murder and conspiracy to commit murder, 4,100 members of U.S. Armed Forces in Iraq. And if we don't stop them now, more will be murdered between now and Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2009. Several are being murdered every day as we speak. So we really have to stop these people, do whatever we can. Just recently, Congressman John Conyers sent a letter to President Bush saying that if he attacked Iran, then they would convene impeachment proceedings against him. But by then, it would be too late. I'm afraid that if the president were to attack Iran, and there's a good chance he might between now and January 20th, that would be it, that we would see once again the rally around the flag phenomena and will to impeachment on the part of Congressman Conyers and his members of Congress, his colleagues, would disappear. So this is a citizen initiative. We're taking it one step down to a grassroots movement to try to get people living in their communities to take responsibility for murdered soldiers in their communities, their families, the next of kin, and demand accountability. Certainly we believe that of all the district attorneys and state's attorneys out there in the United States of America, at least one of them, and perhaps more, would have the courage to convene a grand jury and return a bill of indictment.
Is there any kind of legal precedent where we might apply the facts of another case to this one?
Certainly, one argument against it was made by Mr. Bugliosi in his new book, The Prosecution of George Bush for Murder, which I would encourage everyone to read, especially the first 175 pages. Mr. Bugliosi is a litigator, not a constitutional law scholar, and he expressed his opinion that he felt the president was immune while in office and could only be prosecuted when he left office. Again, there is authority against that proposition, significant authority. During the impeachment proceedings against President Nixon, the Office of Legal Counsel drafted a memorandum in the Department of Justice to the effect that a sitting president could indeed be indicted. Second, at that time, the country's leading constitutional law historian, Professor Raoul Berger of the Harvard Law School, wrote a seminal piece assembling the authorities on this issue, publishing an article in the Yale Law Journal to the effect that a sitting president can indeed be indicted. And in this case, we're talking about something especially serious, such as murder, as opposed to what was at stake in Watergate, basically burglary and obstruction of justice. So there is authority that a sitting president can be indicted, yes.
Now, it's interesting that in Israel right now, Ehud Olmert has said that about the corruption charges involving money, if he's indicted, he will do what the defense minister has asked him to do, which is resign. So it's possible that an indictment might have devastating consequences to a sitting president too, right?
That's the way I see it. That's why I've been working on this now for several weeks. That's correct. I think one indictment, perhaps the whole house of cards would collapse at that point. This president now has the lowest ratings of any president in modern history, even below those of Nixon before he resigned. So I think one indictment, yes, could have profound consequences. It also might finally propel Congressman Conyers to institute impeachment proceedings against the president. You know, I've worked with Congressman Conyers since 13 March 2003, and so far he hasn't done it, but the sentiment is out there among the American people. And it does seem to me then we're really going to have to think nationally, but act locally, in the sense that you need to act in your community, not direct it so much at Washington, D.C. We have that impeachment campaign up. A million people have now said Bush should be impeached, but so far they're not doing it. So we have to take it one step down into the local community, and that is the county level, your neighbors and your local democratically elected officials, district attorney. That's where we have to take our case. And I think the sooner the better to stop the death and destruction in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Somalia, and the threatened monumental destruction that could be unleashed against Iran. The British think tank has estimated that if Bush attacks the alleged nuclear facilities in Iran, he could kill perhaps 2.8 million people. And if you have a look at the Iraq-Iran war, there would be terrible retaliation by Iran on the United States Armed Forces in Iraq. The Fifth Fleet in the Persian Gulf would probably be taken out, and we'd have massive death and destruction and a regional war that could degenerate into something far more serious. If you recall last fall, then-President Putin of the Russian Federation went to Iran and said that, you know, the threat of force should be ruled out and there should be negotiations, whereupon President Bush responded by threatening World War III over Iran, and that threat was clearly directed at President Putin. So it's a very dangerous situation, and I'm suggesting we exercise the prerogative of grassroots democracy here in America and act on a state and local basis.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio. We're speaking with Francis A. Boyle, an internationally recognized expert on human rights and international law. Here's some background information from the headlines before we continue our conversation. While in Europe, President George W. Bush has referred to a desire for diplomacy with Iran, while adding all options are still on the table. Bush announced a new plan to try to prevent Iran from shipping oil. Shortly after that, George Bush and British Prime Minister Gordon Brown announced a plan to sanction Iran's largest bank. The Washington Post and CNN reported this week that Pakistani nuclear scientist A.Q. Khan provided a Swiss smuggling ring with blueprints for an advanced warhead. The report specifically mentioned that Iran, North Korea, and other countries could have acquired these plans. A.Q. Khan, Abdul Qadir Khan, was arrested in 2003, and these and similar stories appear to trace back to a computer and other equipment seized then. The source for this story was former top UN arms inspector David Albright. David Albright has been controversial since 2003 when he continued to argue that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction programs long after others gave up that argument. Albright maintained they may have been smaller than the White House alleged. The Associated Press has interviewed A.Q. Khan by phone to Islamabad, where he is still under arrest. He told AP that David Albright's report is, quote, all concoction and a pack of lies. He argued that Albright is working for the CIA and claimed the latest reports are part of a campaign to pressure Pakistan. The U.S. is, of course, applying pressure in the form of air attacks in Pakistan near the Afghan border. Tensions are rising, and Jane Perlez reported in the International Herald Tribune that Pakistani soldiers and others in the country are enraged about the U.S. airstrike that killed 11 soldiers from the Frontier Corps, a paramilitary force Washington has been spending $400 million to train. I asked Professor Boyle to comment on this latest round of stories about how Iran could have acquired a nuclear bomb plan.
Well, I read that story that somehow, if and when Iran were to develop a nuclear weapon, which they don't have, and then if and when that could happen, then they might be able to take this launcher and put it on top of one of their missiles. But that's like saying that, you know, if my aunt had a Y chromosome, she'd be my uncle. Again, we can't forget that the IAEA just recently certified no evidence that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. Likewise, the national intelligence estimate by 16 of our intelligence agencies have all said the same. But President Bush said he didn't really care. He was disappointed in the NIE. I guess he doesn't like to deal with facts, as was the case on the war against Iraq. My reading of that story, which was also in the New York Times, it was unsourced. It was purely speculative. You know, the New York Times in the past has always before, willingly serve as a conveyor belt, as Scott McClellan put it, you know, a complicit enabler in this administration's propaganda campaign for war. We all remember Judy Miller. So my reading of that story, it's part of the propaganda campaign against Iran. And they, you know, you see that the Times is very careful to slip Iran in there and their Shabab missile.
You mentioned the propaganda campaign. Is it possible this is just all about creating fear? I mean, we've seen a pattern like that for the last 4 years.
That's correct. That's their modus operandi. And again, if you look at that story, it's allegedly out of some computer, which, you know, who knows who altered those computer files, from some Swiss people who were working for the CIA. So, you know, how can we give any credibility at all to any of these reports? It's just like what they did to Iraq all over again. And then it's interesting, the Swiss government had to destroy all the hard copies, whatever this was. So I think, again, the New York Times is playing its role here as a complicit enabler, and so is CNN. You know, what credibility does CNN have after they just continue to have on all those generals who were taking their cues from the Pentagon and on the payroll of military contractors? None. We even know that there are U.S. intelligence agents and others in the CNN newsroom. So we really can't believe any of these allegations. What we do know for a fact is that in its last report, the IAEA did certify that there was no evidence to believe Iran has diverted nuclear materials to a nuclear weapons program. Now, that's a fact, as verified by the IAEA. The Bush administration never cared about the conclusions of the IAEA with respect to Iraq. The IAEA made similar certifications on Iraq. There was no evidence of a diversion to a nuclear weapons program. And then, nevertheless, you had Condoleezza Rice getting up there and saying, well, the smoking gun could be a mushroom cloud. So Bush, Rice, Cheney realized that this strategy of scaremongering the American people to death with a nuclear weapon worked before on Iraq. They got away with it. Congress did not call them on it. The news media enabled it, and they apparently figured they can get away with it again on Iran.
A.Q. Khan, any comment on the connection there? I mean, he was, last I understood, the Pakistanis were not allowing the U.S. to do interrogations of prisoners, Khan, or the son, Nuri Khan, right?
That's correct. You know, I personally think Mr. Khan there was a fall guy by General Musharraf and the Pakistani military and their intelligence. There's no way he could have been shipping all these things, if in fact he did, without their approval. And I also suspect the CIA knew all about it. But, you know, those are only my educated guesses, reading through the lines of what's going on. But clearly I'm highly suspicious of the latest reports that all of a sudden, out of some computer files up there in Switzerland with people working for the CIA, that now it might be possible for Iran to deliver a nuclear device. And, of course, that also fits in very well with Bush's trying to deploy ABM systems in the Czech Republic and Poland. The pretext there, which the Russians, I think, have correctly pointed out, that they're the real intended target, their strategic nuclear forces, of those ABM systems, and it has nothing to do with Iran.
Now, while in Europe, George W. Bush mentioning a plan to prevent Iran somehow from exporting oil, it sounded like a blockade. Would that be an act of war?
I read that report myself among the other sanctions they were threatening. And clearly, only the United Nations Security Council has the authority to impose a blockade. It's right there in the United Nations Charter. That's one of the measures that the Security Council can impose if it wants to. For the United States to unilaterally impose a blockade, yes, that is an act of war. We've already litigated this in cases here in the United States successfully. A blockade is an act of war, and Iran would be entitled to use military force to break that blockade. very similar to what happened during the Cuban Missile Crisis when Kennedy imposed the blockade on Cuba. You know, he called it a quarantine, but it was a blockade. And we know how close the world came to nuclear Armageddon as a result of that blockade. It's an extremely dangerous situation, right?
What about world demand for oil, the Bush administration's desire to control the oil markets? Is that what's guiding this policy?
You know, I think it's both. As you know, Iran has enormous quantities of oil and gas in that area, if you add them up, probably third to Saudi Arabia and Iraq. Second, strategic location there on the Strait of Hormuz. It can stop all the flow of Gulf oil out if it wants to. And then third is the critical geographical location that Iran has with respect to Afghanistan, Pakistan, the oil pipeline that Iran is concluding through Pakistan into India and then onward to China. Iran is attempting to set up an alternative natural gas oil supply system with Pakistan, India, and China that would be separate and independent from anything controlled by the United States. So clearly, the United States does not want Iran to become a regional actor because we don't control Iran. Now, when the Shah of Iran was in there and he was our guy, as Nixon put it, he was our policeman, that was fine with us. We gave him all our high-tech weapon systems and indeed proceeded to sell him nuclear reactors. There was no problem with Iran having nuclear technology as long as the Shah was in power. And then, of course, you also have to factor in Israel into the equation as well and the power of the Israel lobby here in the United States. You know, if you look at the news media, the experts, the pundits pushing for war against Iran, they're all affiliated with the Israel lobby, that's for sure. And you're hearing almost no voices of dissent anywhere. They're completely locked out of the U.S. mainstream news media, whether television, print, radio, or anything.
What about new initiatives on diplomacy with Iran? I understand there are some that are being offered. Let's talk about those.
Yes, we're seeing President Bush pursuing the same strategy he did against Iraq on weapons of mass destruction, which is no reasonable good faith negotiations or proposals at all. Indeed, right now, the president has taken the position that he will not even talk to Iran unless and until they terminate all uranium reprocessing, which they have the perfect right to do under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So, in effect, there are no negotiations right now going on between Iran and the United States, despite the fact that the United Nations Charter and the Kellogg-Briand Peace Pact require negotiations for the peaceful settlement of international disputes. That being said, the latest offer made by Iran last month in May, I think is quite promising. It appears that they have offered to transfer their current nuclear reprocessing program under the control of an international consortium. That is, it would still be on Iranian territory, but it would be part of an international consortium of countries that would operate, control, and inspect the nuclear reprocessing. In addition, we must remember that the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, is still inspecting Iranian nuclear reprocessing as well as the rest of their facilities. And in the latest IAEA report that just came out, the IAEA said that they can still verify, they can verify that there has been no diversion by Iran to a nuclear weapons program. You know, in the past, the Iranians have indicated that they would be prepared to sign the IAEA additional protocol that would permit snap inspections if there are any questions subject to the will of the IAEA. But they're not going to do it without some type of consideration. So it seems to me when you put all that together, there is a very reasonable compromise here that the United States government could sit down and talk with Iran about and hopefully work out. That is not President Bush's strategy at all. His strategy is to do to Iran what he did to Iraq, to use weapons of mass destruction as an excuse and a pretext for war. And I think there's a very realistic possibility of some type of military attack on Iran between now and the time the Bush administration leaves office. Right now, there are two aircraft carrier task forces already over in the Gulf. There is a third one heading in that direction. There are also large quantities of U.S. military forces in the eastern Mediterranean. So literally anything can happen. I think that whether or not they attack before the November elections will depend on the prospects of John McCain winning the presidential election. If McCain wins, they very well then might decide to leave the problem to McCain, whom, as you know, is publicly quoted to have sung the song Bomb, 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 Iran. If Obama wins, then all the more incentive for them to attack Iran sometime between November and when they leave office in January. We can't forget that Bush Sr., after he had lost the November 1992 elections to Clinton, and before he left office, then went ahead and gratuitously invaded Somalia with 25,000 troops for two reasons. One, oil and gas. Somalia had already been carved up by U.S. oil companies among them. And then second, strategic location, right there beneath the Suez Canal on the Red Sea, pivoted towards the Persian Gulf. And it was clear the strategy of Bush Sr. was to create as much havoc as possible so as to lock the United States into Somalia, no matter what the wishes of the incoming Clinton administration. It was really only that Black Hawk Down incident that propelled Congress to pass legislation mandating the Clinton administration get out of Somalia, which they did. But if Bush Jr. follows the same pattern as Bush Sr. did, there's a good chance he will bomb Iran and get us as deeply involved in that war as he can before he leaves office and turns it over to Obama or perhaps even McCain, I can't say. But it's extremely dangerous situation.
We will be hearing more from Professor Francis A. Boyle over the next few weeks, and I will put his full CV, his bio, up on our website. Professor Boyle teaches at the College of Law at the University of Illinois. His latest book, Destroying World Order, was published by Clarity Press. An earlier work, Defending Civil Resistance Under International Law, has been used successfully in numerous foreign policy protest trials. Professor Boyle serves as counsel for Bosnia and Herzegovina in application of the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. This report is just in from Middle Eastern Press. Mohammed El-Baradei, head of the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, has said he will step down if major powers launch a military strike against Iran over its nuclear program. In an interview with Al Arabiya Television, El-Baradei reportedly said, quote, "A military invasion against Iran would pose great danger to the Middle East and the world." For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program is produced at the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions.